Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Andrew Jordan to the podcast. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, James.
So, Andrew, you are with Xtivity. You are the managing director of Xtivity, which focuses on spare parts optimization, supply chain management, inventory optimization, all those great things, correct?
Absolutely correct, James.
Prior to this, you've held positions with Fortune 500 companies in both consumer goods and pharmaceuticals. You're also the founder and managing director of Triskel Consulting before it was acquired by Xtivity. What did I miss in your very brief bio and info on Xtivity that you want to expand on?
I think that's a pretty decent overview of myself, James. In terms of Xtivity, Xtivity's got over a 12-year pedigree of doing inventory optimization in asset-intensive industries. So a bit like my own background, we cross a wide variety of industries, paper products, consumer packaged goods, mining, pharmaceuticals, you name it. And I think what's probably interesting for this audience, and as we go through in a little bit more detail, is just how much there is in common between all these industries in terms of the challenges they face around inventory and then the reliability journey in general.
Yes, absolutely. We often hear that, automotive is different than pharmaceuticals, which is different from oil and gas. Yes, they are different, but we all have the same problems, and a lot of the problems can be solved with the same sort of solutions across all the industries.
Completely agree.
Now, what is inventory optimization? What does that actually mean?
No, it's a good question, James. So, simplistically, the way we look at it is defining accurate min maxes and lead times. So this sounds like something that everybody should have. But the one thing that we've learned over time is these particular ordering values are typically something that people set and forget. It'll happen as part of an ERP implementation or an EAM implementation. Everyone will assume they're right and they inform their ordering and reordering. And almost invariably, they're about in the high 90s wrong. So this obviously has a knock-on impact on your availability and unnecessary consumption of working capital. So inventory optimization in the simplest form is getting that inventory mix right. So we're supporting operational requirements and minimizing committed working capital.
All right, excellent. So it's making sure we have the right number of stock on hand, based on lead time, usage, proper economic order quantities, all those various things that, like you alluded to, are typically done once and forgotten.
Absolutely. And I think what people often fail to appreciate, mostly because we're all busy and don't have time to reflect on it, but in both the demand side and in the supply side, there's inherent variability. We have to constantly adjust these values to account for that variability to make sure that it reflects the operating reality that we're facing.
Yes, absolutely. Now, are there different types of optimizations out there?
You can optimize based on different objective functions, if you will. So some people put a higher weight on working capital optimization and therefore will be looking for those opportunities more closely to reduce their committed inventory. While other people will look at the objective function around availability. So I would say in our case, we would put availability ahead of working capital reductions simply because an hour of downtime on a machine is significantly higher in terms of operational cost than any savings you might get around the working capital. That's a perspective. It's not shared by everybody, but that's kind of the position that we take. If you're not supporting ongoing operations, then you're putting yourself in a precarious position.
Yes, absolutely. Now, why do organizations really need to be concerned about inventory optimization? I know previously you mentioned that typically it's a one-and-done activity.
setting those min maxes. But why do they need to be concerned about this ongoing inventory optimization?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, to reinforce the point, it is a changing dynamic, and maybe I can just expand on some of those elements that do change. There's new assets that are brought on that are consuming similar parts to existing assets. Obviously, that's changing your demand profile. If you don't take that into consideration, you're putting yourself at risk of stockouts and not being able to support your planned and emergency maintenance. You look at suppliers and think about what can happen there. There's inherent performance issues with a particular supplier. They may have capacity constraints. They may have material shortages, which affect their lead times. And then there's other things that come into play. Certainly with some of our more far-flung clients, you have some very real variability in shipping lead times, be it on the water, rail, over the road, depending on capacity shortfalls. If you fail to take these things into consideration when you're setting your ordering values, as I alluded to earlier, all of this manifests itself in a stockout, which is not the objective that we're trying to achieve.
Yes, absolutely. And there's all those various constraints you mentioned. I was doing some work in Ethiopia once upon a time, and they had a major constraint of how much foreign money the government had. So therefore, they regulated on how often parts could be ordered from that site, and that variable time could be anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months before an order got processed.
Absolutely, and that's a great example, James. And if you don't take those things into consideration, you know, you're putting your operation at risk. So that's a very salient example.
Now, we understand why we need to do this, but what type of benefits would an organization expect to realize as a result of doing inventory optimization?
Well, the most obvious one, and the one I'd probably start with, is availability. So what you would expect to see as you start to get that inventory mix right is your service level expressed as a target availability of parts when you look to the store room would necessarily go up. So, you know, going from something, some of our clients here in the 50s to 60s, going up to something closer to the 90s, 98%, obviously makes planned work a heck of a lot easier to execute. You have a much lower percentage of work orders that are backlogged because of part availability. You have less contractors, you know, that are on site that basically you're not able to take advantage of because you thought there'd be parts, but there's not. Very often parts are the last thing that people think of, but the first thing that undermines their planned maintenance. So obviously, if you get the parts in place, you address that, which can be as much as 20% of your root cause for delays. Then you're improving the efficiency of your maintenance planning. You're improving your wrench time. So these are very important metrics for us. But I can't leave the topic without also addressing the working capital implications. So getting the mix right almost always for us means some sort of reduction in inventory. Typically, people will carry too much of the wrong things for many of the reasons that we have already discussed. So what we'll see in the first year is a reduction somewhere in the order of about 10%. And then in the subsequent years of the program, we'll see another reduction in 10%, which is driven by consumption.
Excellent. I have to agree with, you know, the change in working capital. When I've done some basic inventory optimization activities, you know, we're just looking at min-max economic order quantity with some very basic formulas. But we identified a tremendous amount of overstock and a tremendous amount of items that weren't stocking enough of based on demand and usage and lead time. So there's all those huge benefits that come from the reduction in working capital. Other thing I typically find that helps drive that reduction in working capital is the duplicate parts. And what I mean by duplicate parts is having an SKF bearing, having the exact same NSK bearing, having the exact same NTN bearing, all stocked with different SKU numbers within the storeroom when in reality they're the exact same bearing.
Absolutely. So you have to start looking at the functional equivalency, which starts to bring you down the road of looking at your master data, right, and getting that now in modifier attribute in place, associating them with the right asset so that you're building out those bombs and knowing what you're using, why you're using it, and where those overlaps are implied.
Absolutely.
Now, what I would say is where that's an ancillary benefit of starting with an inventory optimization program. As you probably appreciate, when you're building out an optimization program, you need to build a very comprehensive data model of the organization. There are a lot of benefits that come out of that because we have to consider, part usage, what the parts are. We have to consider the suppliers. We have to consider, all the variables around demand. That same data model can be used to interrogate different areas and start to answer some of these ancillary questions as well. So while inventory optimization may be the start, but is by no means the finish.
No, absolutely not. Now, what are the steps to performing an inventory optimization activity?
So I'll just walk you through, our typical life cycle as an example. So first off, everything starts with data for us, and I believe that would be true of anybody else. So we use proprietary data extract utilities to very quickly get out of our clients' ERPs, EAMs, the core attributes and data that we need. We then go through a process of validating that in conjunction with the end user to make sure we're interpreting the fields correctly and that we're not seeing any anomalies in that pull. We would then run it through our algorithms and do some fundamental analysis on it. Now, this is an area where maybe we would differ from some others, but what we'd like to do at that stage is do what we would call an MRO health check. And we will go through a number of different parameters. We'll take a look at storeroom patterns. We'll take a look at maintenance planning and scheduling practices. We'll take a look at supplier performance. We'll look at price variances, a wide variety of parameters. And the reason we do that is because your inventory performance, it's important to understand, is a symptom of a number of other things that are going on within the organizations, which can include internal requisition approval lead times, right? It's or receipts at the warehouse and delays on inspection. All of these things play a role in getting to the inventory that you have. So if you can't have a conversation with a client on the outset as to what the root causes are, it's very difficult to develop the corrective action plan. Now, regardless of what we discover at that stage, we're able to move it into an inventory optimization model, and we will prepare summary recommendations at a SKU level of what the stocking should be, min, max, and lead times. And then we will basically do a training session with them and make sure that the end user are up to speed, and we'll start the program. We operate a software as a service model, so every month we're doing a review with the client team and our analysts to make sure that they not only understand the recommendations, but that we're dealing with any anomalies so we can continue to develop and refine the inventory model. The underlying optimization model is a living, breathing thing. Very few months go by where there isn't some form of adjustment to reflect some new reality that's affecting the operation. So that's an important part of it. But having done that, get into a steady rhythm with inventory optimization. Now we would start to look for those opportunities to improve that performance. So for instance, with a client, we might notice that their internal rec to PO approval lead times has been increasing over the last X number of months. We'll engage our clients in a conversation around that, try to identify what the root causes is, and in certain instances, actually work with them around process definition and looking at ways that we can reduce that. Because as you appreciate, those increases have a knock-on impact to your inventory performance. Again, inventory is an outcome. So that leads to, generally, in the best cases, a very close working relationship and a series of professional services engagements to try to optimize not only the inventory, but then also look at the supply chain.
Excellent. So it's really taking the data, understanding it, and looking beyond the data to those root causes that you mentioned. How long does it take for approval of POs? How long does it take for goods receipts in the warehouse? All those different things, understanding what's going on and making those recommendations based on that, and continuing to refine that optimization model or inventory model as time goes on based on the realities that are uncovered.
Absolutely. We look at ourselves as a service rather than a software. So, you know, you add value through a service through that continued engagement, continuing to ask those questions, continuing to challenge, providing insights to our clients that are difficult to get. You know, there's prevailing wisdom is that if all the data is in SAP, therefore, you know, if you have SAP or any other ERP, you should be able to figure out what's going on. As a general rule, people have neither the time or the depth of user experience to do that. So part of our value proposition is helping people understand what's going on, measuring what's going on, taking corrective action, and then monitoring and measuring at that point to ensure that things remain in control.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Excellent. Very good. Now, you mentioned some proprietary algorithms or advanced algorithms. So what advantage do those offer over a traditional or basic min-max economic order quantity calculation?
Right. Well, so at the simplest of levels, if you're using something like Excel and you're looking at just applying a normal distribution or moving average to your data, what you're going to find is that's only going to cover best fit, the demand profile for about 2% of your items, which to some people is a little bit surprising. For the most part, MRO inventory in particular is non-parametric or lumpy in nature. The quantities, there's a lot of variability in the quantity of usage, and there's also a lot of variability in the frequency of usage. So if you're using a normal distribution type logic to establish the min maxes, what you do is you have a lot of things that are not fitting within that curve. So you find yourself either carrying too much inventory or too little. So the value that applying a number of different algorithms to the data has is we're able to fit better and provide more accurate recommendations that give you a better profile in terms of both availability and service level, but also in terms of the working capital component.
Taking into consideration all those variables that those traditional, simple min, max, economic order quantity equations do not.
Correct.
Excellent. Now, for those organizations that have not done anything, are those basic calculations a good place to start, or should they move right to this more of a advanced method right off the bat?
It's going to be a matter of preferences, you know, with the organization. You know, obviously, I would say come talk to us, you know, get started on a robust program to start with. But there are some values, you know, trying to do things in the first instance with Excel, as an example, and try to get an understanding of what those variables are and how they affect your data. What it leads to down the road is a much more informed client for us and much richer conversations, and ultimately can lead to faster time to value, because a lot of the time is spent through the process building that trust in what we're doing, what we're taking a look at, why the variables that we're considering are important. So if there's been some pre-work in understanding those components, then obviously that accelerates the timeline.
Excellent. Now, you alluded to it previously, but I want to follow back up on it.
Sure.
You mentioned having data that is clean, you know, standardized noun modifier or taxonomy or something of that nature. Is that required to actually perform an optimization?
No, absolutely not. In fact, for what we're doing, the noun modifier attribute really plays no core role in coming up with a recommendation at an item level. Where that comes into play is when you look at the second order, third order opportunities. And I would say they're particularly around, as you alluded to, looking at deduping your data and making sure that you take those opportunities to rationalize SKUs. Or in fact, when you're starting to look at your purchasing history and you're looking at category management, strategic sourcing initiatives, When you get into those types of things, you know, you really do need to know the noun modifier attributes and have those all lined up to your categories. But do we need them to start doing optimization? Absolutely not. I would say the vast majority of our clients still have some pretty significant challenges when it comes to the descriptive data.
All right. Very good to understand that, because some organizations believe they need to have that rigid data structure in place before they can start any of the optimization activities. I guess it really depends on what your goal is, how far along you're on that journey.
Well, I would say that I agree with that completely, James, and that is a conversation that comes up very regularly with our clients. But I think the other side of the argument is you can look at some sources and usage. It's very difficult to build a business case, a robust business case for data cleansing, right? On its own, you have to go into a couple of different assumptions in terms of where the value is likely to come from. Deduping is part of it. But if you run an optimization program concurrently or in phase with that, you can generate cash to support a broader program that can include data scrubbing. So that's typically how we would look at it. The other part of it, an argument for doing these things together, is you start to get a much deeper understanding of that, you know, 10 to 12% of SKUs that's actually driving your business. So you can start to inform some of the priorities around what you should be scrubbing. Obviously, if an item hasn't moved in 5 years, it's not that relevant to operations, perhaps beyond being a capital insurance spare. And therefore, does that necessarily have to be in your first wave of priorities for data cleansing? I would say probably not. So they do work in concert in some of the better programs.
All right, very good. Now, what should an organization look for in a vendor that is offering these types of services, data cleansing, inventory optimization, or the whole solution?
Well, so I think that the answer to that really depends on their relative priorities and focus. But I would say regardless, I mean, you're going to want to have that industry experience and understanding of, you know, the subtleties and nuances of your particular industry and the things that need to be taken into consideration. In the offset, we said the challenges are, you know, largely the same. A lot of things, if you go to a high enough level of abstraction, are the same, but the devil still is in the detail. Right. So having a vendor that you're confident has worked in your industry, understands the subtleties and nuances, understands your language when you're explaining the things that need to be taken into consideration, is much better and will speed your time to value. The other thing that I would highlight in that would be the flexibility. So the ability for them to match or extend their business, their data models, to incorporate the subtleties and nuances of your business. There's always going to be some variable that needs to be considered in a different way. Some are better than others at doing that. But I would think lastly, and certainly the most important, is you need to be working with somebody that you A, trust and enjoy working with, because you're going to have a lot of interaction. As I mentioned in one of your earlier questions, James, refining this model is extremely important. You're more likely to have a productive dialogue with someone that you like, someone that's interested in your business, wants to learn, and is looking to improve. So I would say that is probably the most important part.
Excellent. I think that's vital. Someone who's you're willing to work with, you're comfortable with working with, the willingness to drive that continuous improvement piece, because this is not a one and done activity. This is something that will continue on as new SKUs are added, as SKUs are phased out, and it's something that you truly need a partner with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great word for it.
Now, are there any other thoughts on inventory optimization that you want to share that we may not have touched on or covered?
Well, I guess the last but certainly not least would be, you know, looking at success criteria. So, you know, what differentiates programs that have not gone so well with ones that have exceeded expectations. I would say that's probably an important thing to leave your listeners with as a closing thought. And certainly mine are that commitment is first and foremost. You can't just issue a PO and expect the problems to be resolved. We have seen that. It's about committing the resources, and it's not just inventory resources, understanding what the root causes are, making sure that people in your maintenance reliability organization, your finance organization, purchasing, as well as storerooms and material control, are all on the same page in terms of what you're trying to do and how committed you are to driving change. Our best programs, you can see them moving in lockstep with shared objectives and shared goals for the program. Set meaningful objectives, but also attainable over years, and then measure that success. When you see deviations from that, take corrective action. So again, sometimes a program will be initiated. The responsibility will be put with one or two individuals. They're overwhelmed. They don't necessarily spend the time to unlock the value that's available in the program. Necessarily, the results they realize are diminished. So those would be probably the biggest things that I would say that drive a successful program.
Excellent. Now, if you had a magic wand, be the one thing you would change that you typically experience in one of these programs?
That's a great question. I think probably the biggest one, and it comes back to what separates the successful ones from the not, is the level of review and adoption and prioritization around the items that on a monthly basis the client is reviewing. The best programs have an adoption rate of recommendations in the high 50 to 60%. Right, there's always some where they need custom adoptions and you need to take into consideration extraneous variables. But if you're hitting those kinds of percentages, you've got a high degree of understanding and you've got a high degree of commitment. If we had consistently high adoption and engagement rates in clients, I think that would probably be the one thing that I would want more than anything else.
Excellent. Very good. Making sure you have that engaged client that understands what you're doing, acting on those recommendations, and truly delivering the value of the program.
Absolutely.
Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today on inventory optimization?
So I think what I would ask is, you know, if there's any of this is interesting and they would like to engage in a further dialogue with no commitment or find out some more information, please, you know, access our website. It's www.xtivity.com. Drop us an email, give us a call. We're only too happy to engage in dialogues like this. We all learn from the discussions. So we'd welcome your listeners to reach out and engage our organization. We'd be happy to help.
Excellent. And people can find out more about Xtivity at your website, and I'll make sure to provide a link to that. Are there any other resources on that website? May start to familiarize them or start to get them prepared to start asking some of the right questions?
Yeah, there's overviews in terms of the different responsibilities within the organization and what is relevant to whom. There's a few videos that people can look at to understand the dynamic in inventory optimization, why is it important. But I think probably where the most value would be derived is, you know, just having the dialogue, because we can shape that conversation to the priorities of the individual.
Excellent. So I'll make sure to provide links to all that within the show notes. Now, Andrew, where can people find out more about you, or is Xtivity involved in any upcoming conferences or anything like that?
Yep. We're going to be attending SMRP in October, so very much looking forward to engaging your audience there. And in the interceding period, like I said, please reach out. We'd be happy to discuss.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing you at the SMRP conference. I will be there as well.
Excellent.
All right, Andrew, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk about inventory optimization. It's vital to get experts like yourself on the show to share your vast knowledge on topics like this, because inventory optimization is misunderstood, I find. And I think you provided some great clarity to that process today. So thank you.
Oh, happy to help. Thanks for the opportunity, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.